Blog Talk Radio.
Steve Austin, astronaut, a man barely alive. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Steve Austin will be that man. Better than he was before. Better, stronger, faster.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darryl, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Guess what, folks? We're having a special Father's Day 2-for-1 sale. Believe it or not, a 2-for-1 audio sale. Certainly, I jest, sort of. This is the Comic Shop, Afternet Radio 2nd. Happy Father's Day again. The call-in number, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. We're waiting for the great, indefatigable, irreplaceable Darryl B. I thought that he was here, but, be that as it may, if he does not show up, the show must still go on. I suspect he will probably come up. Let's go to a quick, and I do mean quick, maybe about a minute or so, a quick musical montage. And then when we return, we'll talk about all things comic books, pulp, pop, sci-fi, fantasy, you name it, video games. We'll talk about it. This is Surfing with the Alien, a direct reference to the Silver Surfer. Surfing with the Alien by Joe Satriani. We'll be back, in about a minute. Hold on. Joe Satriani, actually Westbury, Long Island, Westbury, Long Island's own Joe Satriani with Surfing with the Alien. He has an iconic CD cover, album cover that has the Silver Surfer, hence surfing with the alien. Okay, folks, let's just get into it. Our team is definitely needed on the bridge. The captain first. Captain, what's up?
Happy to be alive. Happy to be alive. Happy Father's Day to all the listeners out there. Happy Father's Day to the fathers and the non-fathers and the non- and also the potential fathers. Happy to be alive. Let's get it started.
And then, of course, we could not do the show without the indefatigable, irreplaceable Daryl B.
Echo those statements, and remember, everyone, be a dad. That's the important thing. If you're a father, if you help create it, take responsibility for it, because we need more good dads out there.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Again, our special Father's Day edition of the Comic Shop. And I think we should just go into the topics. Let's make it more natural. Folks, don't be scared. Feel free to give us a buzz at 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. You know, I was perusing Newsarama.com, again, to our listening audience. Newsarama.com is an excellent blog or excellent comic, pop, pulp-flavored website. And they have an issue, or I should say they have several editorials on fatherhood as it is portrayed in the comic books. I didn't really think about it until they gave these listings. They have a listing of the 10 worst dads in comic book lore and the 10 best dads in comic book lore. And it's only after all these years of reading comic books, sometimes things have to come to me simple and plain, that I started to realize that the father plays an indelible role in many of these comic book stories. Wouldn't you say, Daryl, that if for some reason, you know, you think about Peter Parker, the lack of his father, and then Uncle Ben stepping in, that led to him becoming Spider-Man. When you think of Bruce Wayne, his parentage, especially the relationship with his father, or the lack thereof, led him to go into pursuing crime the way that he did. So fatherhood, you know, Norman Osborn, the poster boy for being a bad parent. All these things seem to be centered around fatherhood in comic books. I don't know if it's a natural occurrence or is it something that it was preordained. What are your thoughts? Did you ever think that how the role of fathers in comic books, how they play as far as characterization?
Well, I look at it as the nature versus nurture type debate, you know, because the eternal question is, are we born good or are we born evil, all right? And a lot of times in comics, you get to see the steps that lead a person to go down an evil path. Think about it, all right? Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader, or Anakin Skywalker. All right, not the best dad in the world, okay? Lex Luthor, Lionel Luthor, all right? We've gotten two or three different versions of their relationship, ranging from Smallville to early comics to the various DC reboots. But it's hard because in life, nothing is black and white. But comics make it very easy to have black and white where you see where a character's choices lead them down a bad path. And the heroes we tend to love the most have had difficulties with their parents and overcame them, right? And conversely, some of the characters we love to hate, I brought up Lex Luthor, right? Their parents tried to do everything good as possible, and they still went down the wrong path, all right? And, again, a lot of people haven't read the early Superman things in that, but I focus on Lex for a reason, because that's one character, it wasn't because of the parents he went bad, you know? It was because of his ego, you know? As simple as that. And last example, then I'm out of here. I remember an X-Force, okay? Not the current team, the previous team. And X-Force before, right after, I believe it was Executioner's song, where Charles Xavier is giving Cannonball a choice about, oh, are you guys going to be renegades? Are you going to be under me? Are you following the dream? Do you still believe in the dream? And Cannonball gave one of the most mature answers I ever heard anybody give a father-type figure. He went, you know, all this bull that you and Cable and Magnus have been giving us over the years, it's just that bull. Because Magneto prefers the closed fist, right? The closed fist. Closed fist can only be used to hurt. And then he opens up the hand and he shows that he has a little rodent inside. He goes, but the closed fist can also nurture and protect. You prefer the open hand approach. And go, here, everything's open. You can, I'm bearing myself to you. At the same time, and he goes to slap Xavier. It goes like, but at the same time, it can be used to hurt. He goes like, no, what you gotta understand is that this team, and this was the X-Force lineup with Boom Boom and Richter and Shatterstar, and, you know, it was a real band of misfits. He goes, this team here, we are the combined, we arose from the combined teachings of all of you, but guess what? We're going to take our own path. You know, it's something like that. I want to say it's like a moral play, right, Cap? It's like comics are like a moral play. If a story is good, it'll give you like rules. It'll give you morality lessons. It'll give you reasons to look into yourself. And the best father type characters are there every step of the way, either agreeing or disagreeing with the main protagonist. Cap, floor is yours, man.
Well, based on that great PhD rendition that you gave us right there, I was born inherently evil. Call me Lex Luthor.
God.
You understand? All right? I'm no goody-goody by no means. And if I was in a comic book, I could never be Superman. So, that being said, the father, Son of Jor-El, when he sent Superman from the exploding Krypton planet to Earth, I loved that father. That's the one aspect of Superman I loved, okay, that. And then he was here raised by, you know, surrogate parents here, and he grew up as the Mr. Goody-Goody. I hated the goody-goody aspect because inherently, you know, I'm this totally evil supervillain type of individual. But that whole story, well, father there going, I'm not going to make it, but you, son, you carry on. Here you go. That is very important. And we also see that played out in movies over and over and over again. Here, son, I leave this to you. You carry on. I'm not going to be here. Very important. Something that's very important. And that's all I want to say. Over to you, sir, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, you know, as I said before, again, folks, this is our Father's Day special here at the Comic Shop, and it just came to me for some reason. Sometimes, you know, you're reading these books, and I read them all the time. You don't necessarily psychoanalyze them all the time, but they are morality plays, more or less. You know, one could say they might even tap into Greek mythology, Greek psychoanalytic mythology. Sigmund Freud, I would think, probably plays a role in many of these stories. And you know, as the day came upon us, and looking for topics to discuss, you start to realize that family is an integral part of comic book lore. I'm looking at again. I'm talking about Newsarama.com has this thing about, I guess, for Father's Day, the 10 best dads and the 10 worst dads. And I'm just going down some of the names that came up. Reed Richards came in number 10 as far as top 10. Reed Richards, number 10. Bruce Wayne, number 9. Now, ironically, it says that Bruce Wayne was on both lists. Bruce Wayne was also worst dad and also Best Dad. So that's interesting. Jim Gordon, also from the Batman mythos, Jim Gordon is considered a good dad or best, one of the best dads. Bigby Wolf, who I'm not necessarily really familiar with. Dad, you know about this?
Fables.
Okay.
Him and Snow White have seven kids. And he's a nurturing but tough dad, and he can transform into a 50-foot wolf. Yes, yes. I know Bigby very well.
Well, you know, quickly for our audience so they know what we're talking about. Again, Fables is a comic book series that's been out for a number of years now, and I wouldn't doubt that Fables probably has a lot to do with this this new revisionist TV storytelling that has all these updated versions of the fairy tale. So Fables is essentially a modernized reworking of classic fairy tales. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So we have Bigby Wolf, as you just stated. Jack Murdock, I forgot about him. Jack Murdock is the father of Matt Murdock, Daredevil. And Daredevil's whole thing is related to his father. His father died tragically in the boxing ring. And, or was it after the boxing ring? He didn't call a fight. He didn't throw a fight. He refused, and by thugs. He did, and that story's been retold many times too. Isn't the Kingpin half responsible for Matt Murdock's death, Jack Murdock's death?
Yep. They go like it was his thugs.
They retro-con that later on.
Yeah.
So you have Jack Murdock, and he really, you know, he was a doting father until he died. Rick Grimes, you know him because he's on Walking Dead. The Walking Dead from the comic books as well as the TV series. Animal Man, who's been brought back in the DC 52. His whole shtick is all about family. He's one of those few heroes that actively does the hero thing as well as very much being a family man. Number three is Wally West, which is interesting. The Flash, the second Flash, or I should say the third Flash.
I find that humorous because everybody hated the family.
Yeah.
There wasn't a Flash fan that liked the kids. We all love Linda. The kids were annoying as all hell. And then all of a sudden, here came Barry back.
Uncle Ben, as I mentioned earlier, Uncle Ben comes in number two. And just what the captain stated, Pa Kent. Well, actually, you were talking more about that. I'm thinking about that, too. That really has two fathers. Pa Kent comes in number one, but we forget about Jor-El. Jor-El is the one that made the sacrifice. Pa Kent is the one that came in as the human father. So these stories are so – they would not be what they are today to us if it wasn't because of fatherhood, really. So fatherhood plays a major role in the development of many of our favorite characters. I find that pretty interesting. Now, on the flip side, same thing with Newsarama again. They have the 10 worst dads. Now, Spider-Man comes in number 10. And I guess that's because of his future. He has a daughter in the future. Isn't that correct?
Well, let's remember, that timeline is now dead. This is why some of these Newsarama lists, I want to choke people out. You have a lot of damn things. If you go to Mephisto to wipe out your marriage, yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. You don't need to be on this list.
You're messed up.
Exactly. No, like just like I didn't agree with Jim Gordon on the other one because mainly you didn't see him be a dad much.
Now here's another character. When you think about what's happening with DC 52, this is another character that was so inextricably a 80s villain and the quintessential bad father. Trigon from the Teen Titans. If we go into this new continuity. Unless they figure out a way to bring him back. I mean, there's no Raven. There isn't a Raven in this new continuity either, isn't it, Daryl?
Nope,
is there room
not yet.
For, there's no room for a raven.
But you
forgot about that whole.
Yeah, right. but you see, that's the problem with this list, right? You want to go into the past with some of these characters. You bring up Spider-Man, you bring up Trigun, you bring up those, but yet Newsarama was one of the first ones waving the flag, talking about how DC 52 was a great thing. Don't give me both sides, because you've just wiped out the history I write, and now you're born to bring up Trigun to fill up your list. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for talking out both sides of your mouth.
Well, again, to our listening audience, we're talking about, Teen Titans. Now we think of Young Justice on TV. I mean, Young Justice is definitely inspired from the Teen Titans from the 60s and 70s, and George Perez's redo of the Titans. Even that was a reboot from the 60s Teen Titans. But that's when you had Robin and Cyborg. Now Cyborg is an adult. Oh, it's not even really. I guess he's been rebooted. He's a teenager again on the Justice League, but or a college kid slash teenager. But Trigun was, the devil essentially, a demon, and Raven was his daughter. Raven had that duality where she was trying to do good, but her background was very much evil. So it was a constant war within herself. So that was a fascinating storyline. That was all about the 80s. Norman Osborn, as I mentioned before, he comes in number 8, and he should be number 1. He's pretty bad. Number 7, The Pride. Yes, The Pride, I remember that. That's from The Runaways. When you think about that, The Runaways is a Marvel property that might be film-worthy. Let's just talk about perhaps going into a film with The Pride. The Pride is, I guess, Marvel's version of the Teen Titans in a way. You know, these teen heroes who
are the parents of The Runaways. Essentially.
Well, yeah. Well,
you
yeah,
said
I'm
the pride. That. No. The pride with
well, no. You, well, you're not letting me explain it. What I'm saying
okay.
is the Runaways is the book involving teenagers. Their parents are the pride, the moms and dads. That's what I was getting to.
Okay.
So
my bad.
That's all right. So Father's Day, these were quintessentially bad parents. The kids were good. They did not know that their parents were, quote unquote, the pride. It was a weird thing where at some point they had to fight their parents because their parents had this secret, this secret society. It's almost like, I guess, if your parents were into swinging. Okay, so it's kind of a weird thing. But if you found out your parents were like secretly pornographers, and you had no idea about this world, that's something like what Marvel's Runaways would be. Number 6, Darkseid. Yeah. Yeah, he's pretty bad. Roy Harper. Now, I don't agree with that. How is Roy Harper a bad dad?
Well, here's the thing with Roy Harper. He was a bad dad just because that's how they wrote him. All right? It's the whole Hank Pym debate. Because him, again, I'm a Titans fan. Him and Leanne were had some of the cutest moments in the Titans books. And then you have James Robinson come in and essentially put that whole cry for justice and wreck the character. You know, but people remember him now. That's partially the inspiration for now on Young Justice. You see Wally with one arm. Or at least the real Wally has only one arm. Why? Because someone let this dude essentially cut his arm off.
You mean the new Roy? You mean the Roy? You said Wally. You mean Roy?
Yeah. Roy. Yes. Let cut his arm off. And then, before that, Leanne gets blown up. 6-year-old kid gets blown up. Yeah. Oh, this will make perfect sense. This will be good. We're gonna kill his daughter. All right. That's good. But yet, Jim Gordon's on the other side, and all he did was let Barbara Gordon get shot in the spine by the Joker. That's why I said this list has no rhyme or reason on it.
Well, yeah, well, both incidents are equally as accidental. You know, I mean, you could make an argument that Roy Harper's, Roy Harper's paramour, Cheshire, was, she was a villainess. So that was, she was the quintessential bad mother, theoretically. But I don't see how Roy Harper, he just wasn't there to save his daughter.
Exactly.
That doesn't make him the same reason why Jim Gordon wasn't there to save his daughter. That's a pretty good argument. Magneto, yeah, he's pretty bad.
and again, it's all in the interpretation of whoever's making the list. But I will tell you, I think Magneto's a great parent. I will, because if you read the early his early appearances, or I should say the 90s appearances with Pietro and Wanda, all he was trying to do was get the family back together. He realized he made mistakes. He was trying to get the family back together. Sure, at the same time, he wanted mutants to rule the world, but he was trying to get the family back together.
Omni-Man.
Again, it's all in the interpretation of who makes these lists.
Now, Omni-Man comes up. Now, I haven't really read Invincible that much. I read it long enough to get to that storyline, which it reminds you of the Pride in a way, where Omni-Man on the surface appeared to be this perfect, involved, superheroic dad. I mean, this is one of the, for those who are unfamiliar with Image's Invincible, I think many have likened that series to Peter Parker and Spider-Man with teen heroes and the chief protagonist being a teen hero. But he inherited his powers directly from his father, who on the surface appeared to be this perfect Superman prototype. Later on, you find out that he really was Earth's nightmare in some way, and that he ends up being a villain fighting. Didn't he end up fighting Invincible at some point?
Oh, yeah. And one of the problems with that book is it seemed from trade paperback to trade paperback, he switched his motivations. There was no consistency. Oh, I want to take over the world. Oh, I want to help save the world. Oh, I hate my son. Oh, I like my son. It's stuff like that that's like, really? See, but if you put him on the list, right, I would put Captain Dynamo from Dynamo 5 Wars, because he fathers 6 up to 7 different children with 7 different mothers, doesn't visit these kids. He just slept totally around, and each of these kids inherited a power from him, and they eventually found each other and became Dynamo 5. There's nothing worse than a deadbeat dad. That's worse than everything on this list.
All right, quickly, let's go to a quick musical break. When we get back, we're going to get into the two remaining worst dads on this list. And then segue.
Yeah, you know I already got a problem with one of them. All right, we're gonna rip this one down, and Cap's gonna love my philosophy on this one.
Okay, and then when we get back to the remaining two, we'll segue again to our listening audience. We're gonna segue to a much needed versus discussion. I don't know why I didn't think about this before. The Legend of Korra versus Avatar: The Last Airbender was actually brought up in the Wall Street Journal. This proposition. So we're going to get into it ourselves. Okay, folks, quickly, this is a quick mashup of Marvin Gaye and Hall & Oates, believe it or not. We'll be back in a few moments. Hold on.
Where does it stop? Where do you dare me to draw the line?
Okay, we're back. Once again, that was a mashup with Hall & Oates and the legendary Marvin Gaye. Happy Father's Day, folks, to our listening audience. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We're talking about, ironically, fathers as they are portrayed in comic books. And initially, at the top part of the show, we were talking about the 10 best dads, according to Newsarama.com, the 10 best dads in comic book lore. And conversely, we're now at the point of discussing the 10 worst dads in comic books. We're at 2 and 1. We have a caller. Caller, we're going to accidentally just open up the lines. I think I know who this is. Let's see. Caller, welcome to the comic shop. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hey, it's me, Black Ronin.
Black, what's up, man?
What's up, man?
What's up, guys? How about you guys?
We're going to have you on for a moment, have you on for the team. You can contribute to this as well. Two remaining for the worst. Number two, as I mentioned before, he was on the best list, and he's also on the worst list, Bruce Wayne. I think that might be an accurate thing because he definitely had an indelible role with being a surrogate father to the Robins in his camp. But at the same time, one can make the argument that you have like 13-year-old, or I think Robin might have been as young as 9, the original Robin, 9 years old, in the streets fighting people and teaching them how to, you know, maim people practically. His relationship with Damian, who I think might be one of the best Robins to date, in my opinion, because he's a psychotic kid. But he's the best. If you were to take the helm of the bat, he's probably the best one to do it. He's got that kind of mindset. But one could make the argument that Bruce Wayne is not he's a great father figure and yet not a great father figure. Any thoughts on that, gentlemen? Is that pretty accurate?
All right. This again, you specified my problem with this. Don't have facets. Don't have characters on both sides of the list. But listen, this dude, we checked 52. This dude has had 5 Robins for 5 years. That'd be dadism. That's putting your child at risk. That's, you know, at no time there's, Jim Gordon, you know, the good dad on the other list side. Mind you, he was in the room when Joker shot Barbara Gordon. But, you know, the good dad, they go like, your partner there doesn't look the same. Your partner there doesn't look the same. Your partner's now a girl. What happened to the other kids? What exactly are you doing in that cave of yours? You know?
But, Daryl, listen, one can make the argument that, you know, listen, Batman's very much a psychological hero. His need for vengeance and justice comes from the fact that as a kid, he saw his parents killed right before his very eyes. And with the Robins that he's taken under his wing, they've had a similar experience. So he felt that one can make the argument that he was trying to give them a certain level of respect that, okay, I know what you're going through. This is the best way to deal with it. And they are heroes who make sacrifices. So, you know, listen, it's all fantasy. I mean, reality will be horrible. You can't have a 9-year-old running around trying to kick ass. But for the sake of fantasy, for the sake of fantasy and my fantasy, from what I see, what I want to see, we've accepted it.
Okay.
You know, he's not the only one. You could throw Green Arrow on that list. I mean, you know, the powers that be in 1940, you know, they wanted to soften up Batman. You know, the vengeful. Listen, Batman carried a gun in 1939. By 1940. He was saddled with a kid because the powers that be wanted to soften him up. Robin was so popular in 1940, every hero had their teenage or preteen sidekick. Everybody. Flash, everybody had one.
And hence why Marvel doesn't really do this. And hence why every joke, pedophile joke, comment is largely justified. Because that's the perception. Oh, look, that's just chasing me with another kid. Another kid. You know, I think back to the Chris Rock joke talking about Michael Jackson. Another kid? Another kid? Well, yeah, Bats totally fits this category.
Well, you know what? Hold on, Dad. We got another call. Let's open up the lines once again. We also have our friend Black Ronan. Let's open up the lines once again for yet another individual. Okay, caller, welcome to the comic shop. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. 267.
Yeah, I'm calling from Pennsylvania. My first name is John.
Oh, hey, John, we know you. You know the other stuff.
What's
so you're,
up,
you, are like, you are a comic book head as well.
Yeah, I read graphic novels mostly as an adult. I used to read comics as a teenager, but I read graphic novels now. But and I watch a lot of movies on Netflix and at the movie theater. But one thing I notice, and like I'm of the Generation X, so I've seen like the movies over a certain period of time, and I've noticed the comic books and the graphic novels over a certain period of time, and I've noticed that they have not really put African American men in like commanding roles, either in the cinema or in books, graphic novel books, in which the man is depicted as like a genius type, or like he's like a super spy, or he's like a superhero. The only actor I've seen depicted that way has been like Will Smith and Denzel in certain circumstances, but those are the only two actors I've seen to actually get those type of roles.
Well, you know what? Hold on. We may talk about it for a moment. I mean, we talk about this pretty much all the time on the comic shop, and even also Afro Radio to a certain degree.
Yeah.
We're talking about dads, by the way. I don't know if you're a father, John, but happy Father's Day, nevertheless. Or anybody on the panel, happy Father's Day to the listeners and to our guests on the panel. We're talking about Batman as far as his fathering skills, but I can't blame him completely because he, as I was alluding to, he is one of many in comic book lore that have these teenage heroes, these teenage sidekicks. So that's one other thing. And number one, and I might be in agreement on this, is Deathstroke. DC's Deathstroke.
I have a problem with that.
And you know something else? With Deathstroke, his whole thing, that's the one thing that's always bothered me about Teen Titans. His need to destroy the Teen Titans as this older dude trying to battle these teen heroes, What's his beef with the Teen Titans exactly? It's very weird.
All right. This one's actually pretty simple. The original contract was the Hive wanting to take out the Titans, okay? They assigned Deathstroke to it. Deathstroke couldn't get the job done. His son Grant took the contract.
Right.
He had the Hive experimented on Grant unbeknownst to Deathstroke. So the treatments that they gave him in the middle of a fight of the Titans caused his heart to stop. Now, Deathstroke, Slade, didn't realize about the procedures Grant went through. So he always perceived that it was the Titans' fault his son died. That's it. It's essentially overcoming his demons. But if I beat them, I can't bring my son back, but I could get some closure. That's,
you know,
part of the reason I have a problem with this one.
Now, one other thing. Now, he's not. What's the thing with him and Tara? Now, I know Tara was. We had some kind of romance with her?
Yes, he did. They slept together. But, again, this is where, by wiping out this history, DC freaking shoots itself in the foot. Because this was very. If this was Claremont X-Men type history, layers upon layers upon layers. Tara was his spy. Tara was no good, you know, but she led the Titans to get caught. And if not for her out of control psychotic personality, Deathstroke might have gotten the closure he was looking for.
All right, let's do a quick another segue because we have about 18 minutes remaining, gentlemen. You know, we have this infamous versus segment. Why don't I have my – I'm always finding this clip. regards the clip. I can't find the clip, the Ready to Rumble clip. Be that as it may. Anyway, I just thought about this. I saw this in the Wall Street Journal. And they actually have a pretty fascinating page. They have a weekly page on Legend of Korra. So,
oh, really?
They actually, yeah. The blog section has a weekly update on the Legend of Korra. So the Legend of Korra is really being taken very seriously. And this time around, they had a piece called Which is Better, The Legend of Korra or Avatar? And I didn't think about that. But I will say, I have a great amount of fondness for Avatar The Last Airbender. I can't say that much for the movie. But for the series, the three-year series, I thought it was great. But now after having seen The Legend of Korra, and I'm only on episode 10, I think I might actually like The Legend of Korra a little bit better than Avatar. You know, it has a lot more – Darryl, I know my opinion is wrong. But,
Go ahead.
I just like the premise of it. You got this pro bending thing going on. You have this steampunk world. I mean, well, the steampunk world was there also, but it's a little bit even more city like and technological.
Yeah.
It seemed like Avatar was still very much feudal. It had this feudal look to it. A feudal landscape. This time around, there's more politics. Dare I say, you're dealing with teens going into adulthood. There's a lot going on here. You got cars, for Christ's sake. I mean, it's something. It's great to see the curiosity about what these folks look like older if they're still alive. There was a very recognizable voice at the end of episode 10, and I'm led to believe he's probably going to be a relative of Zuko.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that Black Ronan has been chomping at the bit to discuss this. What's your thought about The Legend of Korra versus Avatar The Last Airbender?
Yeah, I just pulled it up actually just now, just taking a quick look at the article and everything. I haven't given it that much thought, just because it's really two different series. I mean, Legend of the Last Airbender was the first one. So, of course, they were experimenting. They were doing a lot of different things. I'm a martial artist, therefore, I do have a certain love for The Last Airbender because they actually tied their bending abilities to martial arts, more say, mm-hmm. compared to Korra, where it is more of a functional skill almost. And so it's not as tied to, like, specific martial arts or anything like that. I do love the technology. The story also is a lot more speeded up, of course. It's a lot more speeded up story as well. While there is some good, I guess, political stuff as well as stuff tied to the past, some of it also comes off a little – I think maybe because it is going to be, like, just one season or just 21 episodes or whatever it is, some of it seems a little rushed. So that's one of the things I'm starting to realize I kind of don't like about the show. But otherwise, though, I would say right now I would say they're about even, just because as of right now, Korra is only going to be these 21 episodes. I mean, I haven't heard anything about an additional season or additional extension of the series and everything. So until I hear that announcement comes about, which I suspect is going to come sometime this summer, I'm sure they're going to take some kind of hiatus now after the season ender next week. Then I'll see what happens. My opinion might change whatever new thing they come up with. But because everything's so compact right now, it's hard for me to say I really like it extremely better than the first series. That's just my take on it.
Real quick, I'll tell you something that's going to clue you in. Well, first of all, it's going to be 26 episodes. They've broken it up into two seasons. So the first season is 12 episodes. The second season is 14 episodes. Looking at the numbers as far as what really counts in this world. Looking at the figures as far as who's watching, the ratings. You're looking at almost like 4 million people are looking at this thing per episode. If you're talking about 4 million looking at a cartoon, it's going to be renewed, without question.
I'm definitely confident of that.
I'm very confident. I didn't know that the ratings were as high as they were. I would suspect that they would be. But you know, somehow, you know, between three, you know, high threes, low 4 million for a show on Nickelodeon. So I'm pretty confident that it's going to go down. And also just that something that I've advertised, Boondocks praise Odin is actually going to see what season four is actually forthcoming. Because you know, Aaron McGruder is kind of a curmudgeon. But thankfully, that's coming back. So I love.
Yeah, I heard about
we
that.
We get DJ this season. God damn, Aaron, put DJ in the damn show already.
And Caesar, yeah, I want Caesar too. There, you guys, he had to be having Caesar in the new season of Boondocks, definitely.
Yeah, him and Brooklyn. Where Brooklyn at? They gotta be in here this year, season, man.
You know, what's else?
This isn't this Last Airbender? This is based on East Indian myths in terms of like the mythology of Asia. So if you read anything about, you know, things relating to the mythology of the country of India or China, you would get the story of Avatar and the Last Airbender.
And that's what got our ire up when they decided to do The Last Airbender and decided, hey, early on, we're going to just do an all-white cast and have all the villains be Asian. What?
Yeah. The movie, yeah.
Wait,
that was horrible.
Go like, hold on. Did you ever look at the Nickelodeon show at all? And as far as the verses goes, this is simple. It is too soon to be doing this. It is great. Yeah, don't get me wrong. The chorus shows have been great, but Avatar had extended quality. They kept it up.
Yeah.
They had their storyline, and they would give you a few shows to give you a break in the middle, continue with the extended storyline, a few shows as a break. You know, this one has been a bunch of one-offs, and then they just had these last three that were interconnected. And then, you know, it's too soon for Korra. Until, don't get me wrong, it's great. I love it. I love watching it every week. It is great watching compared to some of the dreck that they put out on television. Adventure Time, you know, that people love. I go like, you're watching that? That's good for you. You should be watching this. You know, I'm not going to be hating on everything else. I hope the quality continues, but it's too soon. It's a great start. I hope they continue it.
Yeah, well, I think in a lot of cases they're just lifting stories directly from the mythology, because like an Avatar and airbending, these are all things coming from martial arts.
That's the part that Dal was referencing. We've discussed this, you know, when the movie came out, how upsetting it was. That, I mean, this is going back to 1950 when you see when there's a black face or yellow face or what have you. When you see these when they deal with people of the earth, so to speak, when they deal with folks of color, they can't help but try to co-opt it and pretend like you know, the original characters don't exist. I mean, this is 2010, 2011 when The Last Airbender, the movie, came out. And as John was talking about, it was intrinsically an East Asian and Inuit culture. And it was as popular as it was and currently is in the millions with these folks of color. And yet when it was time to do the live action version of it, we got to go to the white man. It's ridiculous. And they're going to do this. They're trying to do this with Akira. Akira is another one. Popular as it was and is, and it seems unnecessary to try to quote unquote whitewash. Why are we still whitewashing in 2012?
Well,
so
the movie
very
that
upsetting.
Definitely got whitewashed was that Prince of Persia when they put that out. They picked the all white cast. And, like, everyone knows that the Persians do not, the Persians don't have a Caucasian complexion. So, you know, but they put, like, an entirely Caucasian cast in that movie.
You know, one thing I have to admit, too, you know, your martial arts aspect of it, going back to what Black Ronin was talking about, And I have to admit that this last episode, it saw Tenzin get quite nasty. It was a part where Tenzin was fighting the because Tenzin has this kind of it was played by J.K. Simmons, by the way, J. Jonah Jameson himself. We see Tenzin. Yeah, J.K. Simmons is a voice for Tenzin.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Tenzin was fighting the Equalists, and he did some pretty nasty moves. I was like, okay.
Yeah, he did.
You know, it's pretty cool. And you know, I've told you, I want to see a pro bending. I'm almost demanding a pro bending video game. That has to come. That has to come. All right. Any closing? Got about 7 minutes remaining. Any closing thoughts on this versus segment? You know, maybe you, like with Darryl, maybe he's right. Maybe it's too soon. I mean, Wall Street Journal seem to be comfortable in going in this thing. They're already asking. I mean, the title of the op-ed was "Is Korra Better Than Avatar?" So they're already going there.
But in the article, they kind of go into a little bit, but then they kind of end it more with, you know, is the Avatar universe, should it could be compared with the greats like, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien, Ursula K. Lagoon, C.S. Lewis. That's how they end it, though. I mean, they just start out that way, but even they kind of say after a while is that the real question, though? Is Avatar better than Korra, or is it should be, you know, something bigger than that? You know, is the universe itself on that same level? And I say yeah.
And when you think about it, this is the first extended universe like this that has been done that's been non-Caucasian. That joke of a movie aside, they have done this, and they've made this series, going back to Avatar and with now Korra, they have made this series with lack of Caucasian involvement, at least on the screen and everything. They have made it appealing to black kids, Latino kids, Indian kids. You know, I know a family who's from Iraqi descent that lives around me, right? They hate American television, but their kids can't get enough of Korra. Their kids can't get enough of it. I'm on the bus with them, and they see me reading one of the Promise Part One, and they're like, "Look, Avatar," like that. And I was like, "I thought your family didn't watch much TV and stuff." Like, no, but the kids have to watch it because we're seeing parts of our heritage here too. You know.
Go ahead.
You also talk about an article too here about how one person who commented about the article said about how the one thing it also talks about is morals. Like, you know, the Avatar series had morals in it. It's something that they say animation really hasn't had, and definitely during the 90s. They say you don't get the same sense of moral, you know, teaching without being patronizing the kids, you know, with Avatar and with Korra. And also there was another study on race bending about how, you know, Korra, you know, shows people of color in a positive light, which is one of the best shows on TV. Why isn't more of that being done? You know,
yeah,
that's a quote.
Well, that's going to be a strong female lead too.
Well, that's going to be the litmus test is, you know, unfortunately, will we see this stuff? Well, actually, we have not yet seen this stuff translated for the live action part of it. I mean, it's upsetting. You know, we've seen the popularity of this stuff. I'm kind of repeating myself, but we've seen the popularity of this stuff in animated form. Hollywood does not seem to understand that people want to see this stuff live action the way that they were first introduced to it. So if you're introduced to Asian and East Asian and Inuit characterization, you want to see the living embodiment of it on screen. So when they have somebody like when you hear that Christian Bale is Bruce Wayne and you know Christian Bale from his other stuff, I was like, okay, he's Batman. You know, when Robert Downey Jr. has that goatee and the swagger of Tony Stark, it made its money because heck, it's Tony Stark on screen. But when you see the guy from Twilight as Aang, come on now. Actually, he was Aang. He was who was the guy from Twilight? Who did he play on in the live action?
John Carter? No.
That's not him.
That's the wrong guy.
One of the younger siblings in the vampire family. in Twilight was one of the main characters in the live action of
Sokka. He was Sokka in the. I haven't seen the movie, but I remember reading about the actors, and yeah, the kid played Sokka. Yeah.
Yes, Sokka does not look East Asian or Inuit to me. I'm sorry, he doesn't. Gentlemen, listen, we got about 2 minutes remaining. We've got to close the shop. Happy Father's Day again for our listeners who are fathers or who may be fathers.
Reminder to everyone: Falling Skies premiere. This season premiere tonight, 2 hours.
Oh yeah, I'm recording it, DVR.
And yo, actually, we didn't get a chance to talk about Continuum. Anyone checking out Continuum? Or anyone aware of the Canadian store? Canadian.
I will. I've gotten it. It's on the computer. I will have my report for you next week.
All right.
And we still haven't gotten to the Avengers cartoon thing. Well, that will be next week, too. And that one, Cap, has got the tranquilizer gun ready for me.
I'll be on that call, too. I'll be calling in for that.
All right, folks, we're going to go next door for Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. Actually, we're going to do a rebroadcast of my father's interview. It's still going to be a live show, but we're going to play an interview I did with the Oracle. So, as always, gentlemen, we'll do it again next week. Been a pleasure. We're going next door now.
Spawn for the beard?
I think not.
Broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind.
A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bert, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Hey, folks. This is your special two-for-one audio sale, courtesy of Afronerd Radio. For Happy Father's Day, or I should say for Father's Day, Happy Father's Day from Afronerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afronerd Radio. The time is 7:02 p.m. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We're going to have a special broadcast. We had an interview with the Oracle. We're always referencing my father, the Oracle, the tangential producer of the show. This was an interview dating back to 2009 when Mr. Starks was on air with us. And it's a pretty fascinating interview. At some later date, we will probably bring my father on the show again. But I thought that this specific interview was quite telling. But before we get into the interview with the Oracle, for Father's Day, let's get into a funked up remixed version of Dance with My Father by Luther, the late, great Luther Vandross. Let's groove. We'll be back in a few moments. Just about a minute. We'll be right back.
What we're going to do right here is go back, way back.
Again, the late, great Luther Vandross, probably one of his best songs, in my estimation, one of his best, Dance with My Father. That was a remixed version of it. I have to confess, I was probably doing a version of the Dougie and the Harlem Shake as that was going on. So, just confession time. Folks, welcome to AfroNerd featuring Captain Kirk again Sunday. Happy Father's Day to the listening patriarchs. And I could not do it without our own captain here, Captain Kirk. Captain, you are needed on this special Father's Day edition. On the bridge. What's up? For this special Father's Day broadcast, I wanted to revisit a conversation that we had in 2009. Actually, it was around the time of President-elect Barack Obama, inauguration time. Also, I believe it was actually on MLK's, Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday. So you had MLK going on in one moment, and you also had the inauguration, the upcoming inauguration of Barack Obama. So he still had his halo on then. Hopefully we will see another inauguration of Barack Obama. Anyway, there was a lot going on at that point, so I had my father come on the show. We referenced him quite a bit. And as I said earlier, we will probably definitely have him back on the show coming up soon. But I figured that this one instance, this may be an interview that some of our listeners, being that it was 2 years ago, they may be unfamiliar, 3 years ago now, unfamiliar with the Oracle. So blame him for how I am today, and I say that jokingly. So this is about 25 minutes or so. It's a great exchange between myself, Mr. Starks, and the Oracle. So let's get into it, and when we come back after the interview, we're going to talk about this hullabaloo, my favorite word, folks, hullabaloo by Hallmark and their Mahogany line geared toward people of color, where they've been doing it for a year now, Captain, where they have been marketing Father's Day cards for mothers. Happy Father's Day, Mom. We have to talk about it. We have to talk about it. So let's get into the Oracle, and then after that we'll talk about Happy Father's Day, Mom. Hold on.
Take it down. So, from bullets to knives, from the east to the south.
We're also going to talk about Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter made some slick remarks. Oh, some half-slick, half-accurate remarks. We're going to be fair with her. Dr. King we're going to talk about for obvious reasons. And, of course, it is Inauguration Day coming up, a very special Inauguration Day. So we have to talk about that. So this is going to be an extended broadcast. So I think it's important to get into these things. So, again, you know, let's do it. Uh-oh. Who could that be? Mr. Burton?
Yes.
Okay.
What's up, guys?
Hey, Mr.
Hey.
Burton. You.
Afro nerd, my son, Mr. my godson. It's just a pleasure to be on your show, man.
Oh, isn't that
you guys kick it straight up, and I just love it.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Burton. Thank you.
Gee, sounds like Dr. Cosby. Where's my money, Pop? Where's my money? Listen.
Just wait for it. Just wait for it.
Okay.
You'll get it.
Listen, we have you on the show.
Okay.
Because we started realizing that the black barbershop really is something important in the black community, and you've been doing this for quite a while, and we've been recipients of your services.
Yes.
So we thought that it would be apropos to actually interview you. And also, we always talk about some of the pathologies in the community, and I think that some of our supporters and detractors think that we're joking.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought that we would speak to you because you've seen some of these things up close. So
Yes, I have.
So,
and how?
So what do you think about the Black Barbershop. I mean, you've been doing this for quite a while now. What do you think about its importance in the Black community?
Well, I find it to be very important because I give to the people every day. I give money out every day, every day. There's someone in there asking for money every day for food or for milk for their children. So I just love it. I've been there so long, you know, I just enjoy what goes on. You know, I know these people. And it's just amazing. And it means so much to me. It really does.
Well, do you think that the barbershop has changed over the years? I mean, now, you know, hip-hop is a big thing now. And I noticed that in the community you see a different type of barbershop than per se, that, you know, a different type of aesthetic in comparison with your barbershop. In your barbershop, you have now you have President Obama. I'm going to start saying President Obama because President-elect is too difficult. So President Obama, you have a picture of him. You have some jazz musicians. You have a picture of a great day in Harlem. So you have a lot of history on your walls.
Very important photos.
Very important. And they also are conversation pieces where people talk about. And some older people don't, which is scary to us. Some of them do not know who these photographs are. I think they saw a picture of Lena Horne and might have thought that it was my mom. You know, we've heard some things in the shop. So some folks do not know the historical pictures on the wall. But what do you think about the differences in barbershops now? In other words, you see the hip hop thing kind of influencing the present day barbershop. You know, they have. We cut heads, HEADZ, or African cut, CUTZ. What do you think about the difference in those barbershops now in comparison to yours?
Yeah, well, you're correct about that because I have a number of young friends that own barbershops, and they are friends of mine, and I go to their shops at times. So they have pictures on their walls such as Lil' Kim and Ludacris and, the hip-hop artists, and I'm very familiar with these guys. It's not motivating to the younger people.
No.
But in my shop, I have Charlie Yard, Burke Parker there. I have Lady Day, Billie Holiday, and Ozzie Davis and Johnny Cochran and all these people. Matter of fact, some of these people that come in are very – well, I guess I could say they're set back by these pictures. They just look at these pictures and they ask me about them. They want to come back and see them again and again. So that's what's going on. There's a difference in the young barbershop and the older fellow that owns the barbershop. There is a big difference.
There is. Mr. Burton, wouldn't you also agree that the difference would also transcend to the level of discussion that goes on in the barbershop?
Yours,
when we come in, and you've seen many of us go from boys to men, so you watch a lot of us grow up. And every time I've come in there, the discussions are always very deep, very heavy, and in most instances you walk away with new information. So don't you think in many of these newer barbershops that's really not taking place?
Yes, I do, Mr. Sarks. It's not taking place because even with some of the older people that come in, they have information that's not correct, and they thrive on this information, and you cannot correct some of these older people. I don't know what that is, Mr. Starks or Afro Nerd. When you're giving out information that's accurate, they really don't want to hear that. They will turn it around, and they will put a twist on it. As some of the people that I see coming in your blog, you know, the commenters, they're talking about you, you are self-haters and things of that nature, which is far from the truth. You guys were raised with Black pride, and you know this.
Yes.
But these people are coming in and condemning you. Man, I'm appalled at that. I'm upset about it. As far as from the truth as can be.
Well, we're going to get into that, by the way. I'm glad you mentioned that because we want to get into some of the commenters in the last couple of weeks especially who bypassed so much information in AfroNerd, the blog that is. Again, for the folks listening, AfroNerd.com, we're speaking to my father, Mr. Nat Burton. Feel free to give us a buzz at 646-915-9620. Again, it's 646-915-9620. But again, it is amazing that we go through these things. We have the information there. We have abilities to link to the information. If you don't like it coming from us, you know, it is the internet. The information is there for everyone to see, and yet they will deny that. So again, we're going to get into that later on. But I'm glad you brought that up. Something else I was thinking about as well. You know, as you know, we are conservatives, and we don't like to throw that out there all the time. But I was just thinking that. I think that there was a road to our political thinking a long time ago, when you were attending college, as a young boy, I remember going to one of your psychology classes, and I remember that the word dysfunctional was touted about quite a bit in this class. And I think many years ago, that word stuck with us, and then that was, I guess, the groundwork for how we see things. Now, even before we called ourselves conservative and kind of, you know, went into a certain direction as to what, how we think now. Mm-hmm. Again, you've seen this dysfunctionalism up close, whereas when we talk about this to some of our detractors, they don't believe it. They don't think that – they think we're just talking from textbooks. Could you talk a little bit about some of the things that you've seen coming through the barbershop? I mean, you've had customers that are, you know, politicians, they're preachers, all the way down to, you know, listen, dare I say, drug dealers. So you go to span the gamut as far as who is in the community. The community has to come to your shop at one point or another to have their hair cut. So, you know, how do you feel about that, about this dysfunctionalism? What do you really see?
Well, dysfunctionalism, it's a no word in the barbershop. You just cannot mention that. I've seen it, but you can't discuss it because first thing you will hear, all families are dysfunctional. So that word is you just can't mention it. It's a very hurtful word. It's painful. So, but I've seen it. I've seen the young children from when they were 6 years old, and I've seen them, you know, out of these dysfunctional households, and I've seen them go right into pulling their pants down and turning their hats backwards and with the earrings and all that thing. And I'm telling you, man, even the adults, they make it right. It's a fad. It's a new fashion. It's nothing. But that dysfunctionalism is there. But you cannot, some words you just cannot mention. It's so painful. And I see that in your blog I must go back to. Some things, as Mr. Sark says, is unattractive. The truth is unattractive. So you can't mention those things. You just cannot, guys.
I think you got to be careful with that statement. I think Mr. Sark has a patent on that. So.
Yeah, okay.
Be careful.
I just love it. I just love it.
That's okay. That's okay, Mr. Burton.
Listen, Mr. Sark, you're up. Yeah, I know you have some questions. You also visit the barbershop from time to time.
Oh, yes, yes. You know, again, I have to just reiterate and drive the facts home that Mr. Burton, again, has seen many of us, and myself included, go from children into men. And, it's very important for us to note the influence, Mr. Burton, that you have had on many of us. Again, I've walked away with many nuggets that I've gotten from you. I've repeated some of your nuggets. As a matter of fact, some of the information I've implemented into my own child rearing, because much of the information, you know, again, is very important and very pertinent in order to navigate out here. And
Mr. Starks, excuse me, you're just too kind. Too kind.
Uh-oh. No, but it's true. We do straight talk here.
Yeah, okay, guys. I'm loving this. Maybe I'll have to come back again.
Oh, here we go. And so it starts.
Yeah.
You need a third partner?
We might. You already have production credit, Dad, so.
Yes.
Okay, guys.
Listen, something else I wanted to get into as well with the barbering it within itself. Well, after you also started out as a hairstylist for women. You might want to talk about that as well. You made a transition at some point. What was behind that? And you know, do you think that maybe the men are in greater need per se? That there's a certain dynamic that's maybe different in the barbershop as opposed to the hair salon.
Well, I tell you, when I started into doing hair, especially for the ladies, I was a young man at that time, and you guys know me, and I was sort of in there, you know, for the girls. That's before I got married, before you guys were born. And that's how I got into hairdressing for the women. And I was a top-flight hairdresser there in New York City as well. And but I did it so long. And the girls just started getting on my nerves, man, to be honest with you. After you were in there such a long time, you know, if you weren't ready on time for them, they said, you know, you missed my appointment, and you shouldn't have taken her and this type of thing. So I had an opportunity. I started working with a barber, and this guy passed away. And so I just sort of made a transition into barbering. But I also still do some of the ladies from time to time, and I still enjoy it, but with my wife being there, you know, it's a little uncomfortable when she comes in and I'm doing a woman's head, and the ladies, you know, sort of flirting with me and things of that nature. So that's the reason why I left being a ladies' hairdresser.
Mr. Burton, I have one other question, actually. What's your take on the abundance of barbershops and beauty salons in our neighborhoods? You know, D-Bird and I were talking behind the scenes yesterday, I believe, and we were just discussing how, you know, growing up, we remember there were three or four main barbershops in the neighborhood. That's what you had, and you knew who they were, and that's where folks went growing up. But now you seem to see a lot of young people, particularly, opening up barbershops and nail salons, many of them in the black neighborhood, some of them next door to each other. How do you feel about that?
Well, that's a hard question. But I'll tell you what, many of these young fellows are coming out of prison, and they become barbers in prison. So that's why you see so many barbershops, because I've had some interaction with these guys. As a matter of fact, I've had some of the prisoners come to me and ask me for a job. And, you know, they say maybe I should give them a job. But when they come in, you know, their mode of dressing and that type of thing, I can't tolerate that, guys, because you know how I am. I'm the guy that likes to stay sharp and good information in the shop and that type of thing. And but those guys, they don't fit into my program. So I hope that answers your question. But that's one reason why you have so many barbershops now. You know, so many young guys, that's all they do. They don't finish high school or go to college, so they become barbers.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you one thing also with the barbershop. I mean, I think that it's you know, we can talk about hip hop. I don't want to blame hip hop for everything, but it appears to be like the aesthetic. And I'm wondering if we're getting the same kind of wisdom that we would get from your shop and other shops from older folks that can give you that wisdom. I'm not so sure we're really getting that from the barbershop. But do you think that in this point in time, because we are talking about a dearth of fathers and fatherhood in the black community is kind of diminished, that the black barbershop has kind of replaced that? That, I mean, I, you know, as being in the barbershop myself, and of course growing up in the barbershop, I was there to witness a lot of things that it made me realize. I mean, of course, it became more solidified when I saw Ice Cube's film, because sometimes you don't realize things when it's happening, you know, when you're in the middle of it. But looking back, there were a lot of things that went on that I thought that the community asked of you that were very, very much of what a father would do. It seems like the barbershop as an institution has kind of replaced fatherhood as an institution. Would you say that's accurate, or maybe I'm overstating it a bit?
Yes, I think that is accurate. It is. They sort of help to talk to the young fellows, because I still talk to the young guys as they come in. Matter of fact, a fellow brought his two sons in yesterday to visit me and talk to me. And I hadn't seen these young fellows for quite some time, but he felt the need to bring them in to me. And that just happened yesterday. And I had a picture of Barack Obama, and I gave it to those guys. That happened yesterday, guys.
I guess they're appreciative. But, you know, we have a caller, so let's open it up. Let's see what happens.
Okay.
Caller, welcome to Afternoon Radio. You're speaking to my father, Mr. Nat Burton, proprietor of Desmond's His and Hers. What's up? 901. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? It shows that it's open.
Hello?
Hello? I don't know. You know, we'll try again. Listen, if you're listening, again, your area code, we had you there. Your number's still showing. Let me try one more time. Hello? 901? I don't know. Must be something wrong with the connection. That's odd. Okay, if you're listening, you may want to try to call back again. I don't understand why there's a mix up with that. Dad, you want to hold on for a second? We're going to go into a musical break.
Okay, all right.
So we'll be with you in just a few seconds, folks. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. That was Eric Clapton and B.B. King. Hold on, I'm coming.
Listen, good God, that was fucky, boy.
Yeah.
That was fucky, son.
Good. We tried. Listen, we have a caller that I think has returned. That might have been a connection problem. Caller 901, welcome to Afro Radio. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
This is Karma from Memphis, Tennessee. I was just listening. I was hoping you'd let me listen. Then I couldn't get you on the computer.
Oh, that's okay. Did you have a question?
No, I just tuned in. I hadn't had a chance to hear what you were talking about yet. But I always, when I remember, I always like to listen to the show. So I don't know what you're talking about, so I don't want to comment yet. But can I just hold on? And
Sure. Well, we just played a song, Hold On, so it's appropriate. So we'll push on hold. So,
all right.
Okay, you can listen on. Okay. All right. Dad, we're not going to keep you on too much longer. We know you're very busy. But I want to get your impressions on, I mean, listen, we're getting into history now. What are your thoughts on President-elect, soon to be President Obama? We spoke about this earlier. You said that you were very comfortable in the assertion that this was bound to happen. You didn't seem to feel as shocked about it as perhaps a lot of other folks of color or folks in general. What did you mean by that?
Well, after seeing the black mayors before, such as Carl Stokes of Cleveland back in the 60s, and also seeing Governor Wilder of Virginia, if these things could happen, I thought it was possible to have a black president. I was not shocked. I'm being very honest with you. I've seen so many changes, black astronauts and black college professors in white colleges. So I thought it was about time to have a black president. I think anything could happen now. Matter of fact, I've seen a man put on the moon. So I was not surprised, and I'm a little shocked at hearing other people say that they were surprised to see a black president. I was not shocked, because I don't think Barack himself was shocked, because he wouldn't have ran if he thought he couldn't become president. And also Jesse Jackson back in 1984, he ran for president. He thought he could become president. And many of us said from time to time we thought maybe Colin Powell could become president. So I was not shocked by Barack becoming president.
Two more questions. I'm just thinking of something. Now I lost my train of thought.
Ebert, actually, I have a follow-up question to what you just asked, Mr. Burton.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Do you think the importance of Obama's candidacy is reaching everyone in our community, particularly those we refer to as the lower tier?
No, I don't think so, Mr. Sarks. I really don't, because if you are in that lower tier category, you sort of stay there. That's my belief.
Yes.
I don't know if you can make that transition. I don't think so. I would like to hope so,
yes.
But I don't know. I don't see any big change right now. I see the same things going on every day as has been going on for a number of years.
So you don't think that the pride element, I mean, there seems to be quite a bit of talk of black pride now that, you know, this is, you know, it's black folks are supposed to be proud and you know, that you don't think that's going to translate maybe in the future, or you're guarded on that, or?
Yeah, well, I don't think people really change. You know my thinking on that. I think you have to be taught another way. You have to be taught another way. I don't think you change. Many people say you change. I don't know about that change, and I haven't seen that. Somebody has to come in and tutor you and teach you another way, change your thinking. But just for you to change because you see in the office, I don't think you can do that.
Something else that I was thinking of. You know, you raised us very, very much in a pro-black environment. In other words, maybe we've moved beyond that, but, you know, I'm thinking about Jesse Jackson. Jesse Jackson was very a prominent figure in our household at one point. How do you feel about, because you've kind of lessened a little bit on the whole pro-black thing. What are your thoughts on that? You know what I'm getting at? I mean, again, maybe 15 years ago, we fought a lot alike, like many of the black masses. But now I think that Mr. Starks, myself, and you, we've kind of pulled back on that. Do you know why we pulled back, or do you think that's proper? Or not that we're not proud to be black, but the whole black progressive and power fist kind of thing, we pulled back on that.
Well, you're absolutely right, Afro-Nerd. I did raise you guys to be black, you know, in your blackness, be comfortable in your blackness. But as I moved on myself, I see when black people are wrong, you got to go with them anyway. And I don't feel comfortable with that. You know, just being black, you know, you're with the Klan. You know, and I'm not with that, with the tribe, as you guys say. And I don't want to be with that. That's what happened. I saw so much negativity, and I just dropped out of that. And I feel comfortable where I am now. I'm still black all the way. But when the brother is wrong, man, he's wrong with me.
Yeah, I think it's gotten too fraternal, where you kind of have to just stick with whatever goes on. You have to stick with it, even if it's
and I'm not comfortable with that. I'm not comfortable with that.
I'm sorry, repeat that, Mr. Starks?
I said that tribalism that we've referred to.
Yeah, I'm not comfortable with that.
I just remember that, you know, we really had heavy conversations about, you know, the white man is in the, you know, we've got to get after him, and we have to really put our fist in the air. Because folks think that we've been conservative and that we can't see the other side, but we were the other side at one point.
Exactly.
We used to make their arguments.
Yes.
Well, let me say this, guys. By the way, something came to me. You know, my place has been burglarized by the brothers, you know, more than one time. My business has been burglarized by the brothers. I give them money, they come back and burglarize me. So I have a problem with that.
Well, you know what?
No, they're not really brothers.
It's funny you should mention that, because I think Mr. Starks has a story.
Yeah, unfortunately, Mr. Burton, we had a, you know, the birthday party I went to today was scheduled. It's for my niece at the dance studio. And unfortunately, when we all arrived, guess what we found? Once again, this is the second time this happened. Someone decided to shatter one of the large glass windows in front of the business.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to deal with that today, the second time.
Right. Right.
So I guess those kind of things, you know, we are experiencing it. It puts a different spin on your thinking, I think.
Yeah, man.
This
is what's going on, Mr. Brennan. You know, although these folks come to the blog and accuse us of being self-hating, and even some folks still to this day think we're white folks, the joke's on you, because we're as black as anyone else. But the fact of the matter is, we can't keep turning turning our cheek to some of the madness that's going on around us, and in many instances, some of the madness that's going on against us.
Yeah, well, what's happening? You guys are trying to enlighten the people about certain things, and they don't want to hear that. This is the same thing that goes on in the barbershop. I have some information. My son knows I'm always collecting information. And when I tell those guys the truth about a lot of things, I can even show it to them on paper, man, they will put a spin on it and laugh at me and crack jokes and everything. I don't know what that is. Maybe you can answer for me. When you really tell these guys the truth, they have a problem with it.
Yeah, well, they have a problem with us. So
I can understand that, because I see it all the time, even the older guys. You know, they don't read very much. I'm always reading and gathering information and stuff of that nature. And when I tell these guys certain things, man, they have a problem with me.
Very painful, Mr. Burton.
But I'm comfortable. I'm comfortable, though. They don't bother me too much about it, because I'm comfortable, because I know where it's coming from.
Yes.
Well, Dad, we're gonna let you go, because
okay,
gonna,
guys.
You know, this is we appreciate you coming through. Love you, love you, Dad.
Right.
I got to say that on air.
Yeah. Listen. Let me say this. I thank you guys for having me on, and I'd like to wish everybody a happy Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday, and as well as the inauguration for President Barack Obama.
Yes.
Appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burton. Thank you for coming through.
Okay, guys. All right. Bye-bye.
That was Mr. Nat of, that's what he says, what we call him colloquially, or the oracle, as we say.
Yes.
I said that on air, because you have to profess your love to your parents.
Of course.
Because, you know I'm telling you something. It prevents rampant buggery in the prisons. So, folks, you know, you have to say this to your parents. I'm sure you say this to your children, Mr. Starks.
Of course.
And when they get older, whether they're 30, 35, or older, you have to say these things, because those who did not receive it end up somewhere, with the pillow in their mouth in prison.
Yeah, you're right. They go looking for it in the wrong places. You're absolutely right.
Oh, you better believe I'm going to say I love my father, so, and my mother. So we may have to have that. Then we have the Richard Pryor show. That's when Mrs. Burton will come on. When we do that, you know, uh-oh. Watch out now. So take it down. So,
from bullets to knives.
All right, folks. We're back. That was the Oracle back in 2009 discussing all things dealing with the barbershop, Barack Obama, politics. We were all over the place. And in listening to the playback of that, I have to chuckle. It was pretty funny. And I definitely enjoy my father and both my parents. But, hey, listen, it is Father's Day, so I have to pay homage. And I figured some folks may not be familiar with the Oracle. I mean, we reference the Oracle a lot on Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, so he's probably ready for his own show based on what we heard. What are your thoughts, Captain? We're going to go probably to, you know what, we'll probably just go into another discussion, actually. I don't want to go to a musical break quite yet. What are your thoughts listening to that broadcast more than 3 years ago?
Well, D. Burt, you're not from the hood. You come from a two-parent household. The world hates you. They hate you. You said you love your dad. You respect your parents. And obviously, based on that interview, your father respects you. It was a beautiful thing. The world hates you. They'll say you can't relate, D. Burt. They say you're not from here. You're not from the street. That's right, you're not. You're not. That's absolutely right. That's absolutely correct, but they'll hate you. They'll say you can't relate. You're not like us. I wasn't raised with my dad. I wasn't raised with my mother. That wasn't this. I wasn't that. I can't change. I can't never change. I can't do this. I can't do that.
Well, I'm sure he's in pretty good shape because we were able to get him a flat screen for his den. So he's in good shape, the Oracle. Trust me on that. Going into the chat room, I see our friend Q-Storm. He has some pretty nice things to say about my pop, and I appreciate that, Q. He says, I definitely want to hear more from Mr. Burton on future shows. Forget about interviewing personalities and celebrities. Get him on the show. I'm sure he has more to say and more knowledge than half the so-called personalities out there. His head's already big, so we hope that we can fit him in. Based on what you're saying, you know what? I do want to talk about something. I really, you know, listen. I obviously have a lot of respect and love for my pop, and it really incensed me on this next issue, Captain. Maybe I'm looking at this wrong. Maybe it's just the times you're living in. I'm sorry, Captain.
No, I said no. You're not. You're looking at it correctly.
Well, I'm trying to be open-minded, but I can't get my head around this one now. This story dates back to 2011, folks, which goes to show you that we really are living in a 24-hour news cycle. So last year, this time, during Father's Day, there was a controversy that we are revisiting now, a game on AfroNerd. Because they brought it up again, about Hallmark's Mahogany line. Now, for a number of years, I actually appreciated the fact that Hallmark has had the foresight to focus on African-Americans and African-American culture by having Mahogany cards. So if you want to give your mother or your father or your grandfather or your niece or nephew or what have you, your relative, some kind of visual sense, which you can easily see in a card, Mahogany gave you that opportunity. So I have to give props to Hallmark for that. Unfortunately, they've gone one step too far. Now they have these cards, and I would assume, now I don't know if this is cross-ethnic and or cross-racial. Right now, it appears to be something that's coming that's intended for a black audience. Now they have, wait for it, Happy Father's Day mom cards. Happy Father's Day mom cards. So it's a Father's Day card that a child would give
to his mother if the father is not present. And from what I can see, it appears to be emanating from the Mahogany line, courtesy of Hallmark. Now, I'm looking at a lot of writings on this thing on the internet, Dr. Boyce Watkins, who I don't always agree with. But dating back to 2011, when it first came up, he had a problem with it. And it, even in he wrote a blog for the Huffington Post entitled Hallmark's Father's Day Card for Black Mothers, Way Off Base. So this happened last year. We're into it the following year now. So not enough of a stink came out of it from last year. And this is purely, in my opinion, business. It's always about business. And they're able to, again, talking about Hallmark, they were able to see or detect a possible way in, a market. And this is what they found. They said, listen, there's plenty of single mothers that are parenting these children. The fathers are non-existent. Let's take advantage of this. Let's market to this faction. But it's marketing to this faction to our detriment, Captain. I'm looking at this 2011 piece on my computer screen by Dr. Boyce Watkins, and he has a picture. He has an example. He has an example of one of these cards, and it has a black woman in silhouette, standing tall, standing defiant, standing strong. And on the card it says, for all those times you've been there for others, you deserve a day just for you. I have no problems with strong black women, but do you have that defiant image for Father's Day? Why not have that for Mother's Day? Let mothers be mothers, let fathers be fathers. I don't know. I don't want to wax on forever, but this gets me. Captain, am I wrong? Maybe we're supposed to kowtow to this demographic. They're just looking for a demographic. We are talking about a lot of single mothers that many would say have to play the role of mother and father. So maybe they're supposed to capitulate to that demographic. What are your thoughts?
Well, some people would say, notice what I'm going into right now. Some people would say that we're moving towards the androgynous society. Some people would say, but let's just clarify a little something. Mahogany refers to a reddish-brown wood. So based on what you're telling me, based on the information that you've given out, they're using mahogany to define the black section. Is that correct, sir?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's also, you know, the film Mahogany with Billy Dee Williams and Diana Ross also.
Yes, absolutely. So the single mother situation is, yes, rampant in the black community, but it's huge throughout here in America with everybody and also through Europe. It's very big. It's very big, 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 big. The fathers are not in the homes all across the board. This is very big. This is very, very big, 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 big. So if I'm this company, not only targeting, you know, black people, because, you know, black people would be a smaller demographic, you have to eventually target everybody if you want the money. I don't know what you would call the other ones. If you're looking for niche market, forget the niche market. It's the whole United States, the whole of Europe. Get it going if this is what you're trying to do. I don't agree with it at all. Just as you said, just to piggyback on yourself, you know, let the mothers be mothers, let the fathers be fathers. It's a different day for different reasons. You understand? They're both parents. Let's stop the foolishness and get everybody back together. Family is society. To break down the family, society breaks down. And that's what we have right now. The androgynous business does not work at the end of the day. I said it. You could email me if you have a problem with it. You know where to find me. Back over to you, Sir Desmond. I'll take the hit on that one. Don't worry about it.
Okay, I want to read something quickly. And it's something that, you know, the more that I think about this, folks, you need to be upset about this. Perhaps that I may have to find, well, may, I will. Next broadcast, I'll have a contact information on Hallmark. This goes beyond the pale. As the captain has alluded to, the whole notion of niche marketing. Why is it, and I mean this sincerely to our listening audience, why is it so easy? Why is it so easy for the business sector, for marketers, to find niche marketing that delves into African-American dysfunctionalism, that relies on African-American pathology? They can find it for that. Now, this show is niche marketing. Black rock music, urban alternative music, independent and conservative talk, quote-unquote barbershop talk. There's a lot of things going on here. Black intellectualism, what have you. A lot of things to unpack from our show that would constitute niche marketing. And yet, when it comes to a dysfunctional edge, they can always find a way to market that. When it comes down to marketing TV on the radio, Fishbone, any of the black rock artists, I mean, all the things that we get, Afro Punk Festival coming up, I believe, next month in Brooklyn, all these things that are going on in the community that are clearly alternative. You can't market black alternatives that would shed a more positive light for folks of color. But when it's something that is definitely a pathology, they're right on top of it. There's no, or we can green light this, but we can never green light something that might throw a different light or shed a different light on the African-American experience. Now, I'm going to read something briefly from Dr. Boyce Watkins' piece. Again, this is going back a year ago, and there are more articles this year, but it appears that with these 24-hour news cycles, we will talk about this, and then next year we'll be shocked that it's going on because we forgot that it was discussed last year. So I have to take the hit on this as well, that I didn't realize this was brought up last year. They have just revisited it. I think BASF, of all places, was shocked about this, although BASF toils in all BASF and media takeout. They toil in black stereotypes and black stereotyping. That's their business. Anyway, this is what Dr. Watkins is saying. He says, I couldn't help but notice that Hallmark has issued a Father's Day card for black women. I'll admit to being taken aback by the sheer thoughtlessness of this endeavor. While studying the image of the strong and defiant black woman standing on the cover of the card, taking pride in the fact that she's holding it down while those quote-unquote trifling-ass Negroes are out there doing only God knows what. From what's been reported, these Happy Father's Day mom cards are used mostly for the Mahogany line at Hallmark, which focuses on the African-American community. It appears that someone has been doing their demographic research. The card made me think about my daughters, who don't need yet another image, song, or slogan that makes them look forward to becoming somebody's baby's mama without giving a second thought to doing the hard work necessary to create a stable and sustainable family structure. In parentheses, he says, we also had long conversations when Fantasia's baby mama theme song came out a few years ago. Yeah, I remember that myself, actually. She did have a song called Baby Mama. Wow. Anyone who spent time in urban communities realizes that there is a powerful trend of young people having children without thinking about the fact that two parents should be raising a child together. One girl I mentor in the hood, who had several aunts working as single moms, actually asked me, do you know anybody who's married? I don't know anybody who gets married. Wow. Now, you know, we on a couple of shows, Captain, we talked about this whole same-sex marriage thing. And I believe in the natural order of civilization. But But when they come back, you have young people saying they don't know anyone who's getting married in the black community. Why in the hell are these black folks, you know, I've been hearing more and more, you know, the percentages are going down in Barack Obama's, or against Obama's, Barack Obama's favor, President Obama's favor. He's actually losing some of the black vote, allegedly, because of these holy rollers in the black community because of his stance on same-sex marriage. And I'm saying, wait a minute. At the same time, you have young folks in the same community asking, where are the black people? Where are the married black people? But you are concerned that the gay folks want to get married. There's got to be a matching of logic for me somewhere. Not that I have wholesale approval. Not that I have wholesale approval, Captain. But I came to the conclusion based on fairness. So now we have, now we go one step further, and the world sees that we're being clowned. This is a way of clowning us, isn't it? You're clowning the black community specifically by making Father's Day cards for mothers. And yet, we talk about these issues, Captain. The minstrelsy continues. Steve Harvey, the Breakfast Club. You know, not to deprecate on everybody that's doing terrestrial radio. But we have severe problems to the point that people are marketing dysfunctionalism. And I've said that before, and I don't think people understand what that really means. That they are marketing this to you now. Now, why bother to ask for a structured familial, a structured family in the black community? Why bother to ask for that if we have cards that are underwriting the need for mothers to be fathers? They're giving it a stamp of approval on it now. I don't know. We got about 4 minutes, Captain. Any thoughts? Am I, you know, you said you agree with me. I mean, we just have to ride on this together. You know, someone's going to tell me. I'm pretty sure there are some folks that believe that this is the reality. These mothers should be applauded. And I'm not saying these mothers should not be applauded. They are definitely being applauded. But they should be applauded. They should be applauded for being mothers. Sometimes you just are lacking. I'm sorry. You know, if you're missing a limb, it's very hard to can you really compensate for a missing limb effectively? Not easy. If you lose your limb or lose your sight in one eye, there you go. You have to work with what you have. But you don't pretend like you have a leg when there's no leg there. This is just logic, I think. Captain, we got about 3 minutes.
Yes, it's definitely logic that makes sense. And some people would say it's more right now it's on along the lines of philosophy. That's where they start blurring the lines. You understand? It goes from logic over to philosophy, and you start blurring the lines. Well, really, I don't know if it's really necessary, because once you have the person here, you know, they're actually here, they're an entity, you know, they can, you know, you're pretty much the child raises themselves, they can this, that. They start coming with this type of, you know, philosophical type of logic that makes no sense, you know? It makes no sense whatsoever. So the logic that you're coming with is absolutely correct. As Darrell would say, your opinion, though this time based in facts, based on empirical evidence, and also based on statistical analysis, is correct. Not wrong this time. So there you have it.
usually with the comic shops, Darrell B., opinions are actually wrong.
Yeah.
And also, rest in peace, Rodney King. Out of here at 47. Amazing. He set off a firestorm in the 90s. And, well, you know, I have no words. You know, it's unfortunately, he's still a relatively young person. And it is what it is. We'll talk about it. And I will try to get some more information on Hallmark. If, for our listening audience, if you feel that there's a need to contact these people, that on some level this is insulting, I think it's insulting on some level, especially if it's being, if the black community is the sole community that this is being targeted toward, that's an issue. All right, Captain, until next time, We'll be back Wednesday for the Midweek and Review show. Let's get into a little bit of funk, again with the Father's Day theme. Papa don't take no mess. James Brown, the godfather of soul. See you guys and gals on Wednesday. Thanks again.
Heavy, funk, hot, 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 and bad.
Papa got a whole lot of heart, and Papa will do his part.